We present Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter Wimsey in Have His Carcass by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted for radio by Alistair Beaton, with Mariah Aitken as Harriet Vane and Nigel Stock as Inspector Umpleby. Episode 3, A Dutiful Son. To construct a theory of murder without a corpse is difficult enough. To do so when no trace can be found of the chief suspects is sufficient to try the patience of the gods. Having found the body of Paul Alexis on the beach near Wilvercombe, Harriet Vane had failed to prevent the body being washed out to sea by the incoming tide. This unhappy circumstance was complicated by the disappearance of Haviland Martin and Julian Perkins, the only two people known to have been near the beach at the time of Alexis's death. Even Mrs. Weldon, who had been engaged to marry Paul Alexis, could provide no evidence to support her highly emotional assertions that her fiancé had been murdered. Lord Peter and Harriet Vane were by now pinning their hopes on the razor found near the body. They knew it had been purchased by a man calling himself William Bright. Hoping to make Bright come forward of his own accord, Lord Peter carefully planted an article in the pages of the Morning Gazette. While Inspector Umpleby of the Wilvercombe Police, with no clear line of investigation of his own to pursue, made his way down to the harbour and put a few pertinent questions to the only other person who might have witnessed the death of Paul Alexis.
Can't a man take his own boat out when he likes and where he likes? Sea's free to all, ain't it, Inspector?
Of course it is, Pollock. But if you were up to no mischief, why take that tone about it, hmm? What time did you get to the Flatiron?
That ain't no business of yours. Police here, police there. There ain't no freedom in this blasted country.
Look here, Pollock, if you've got nothing to hide, why not answer a plain question?
Well, what is the question? Were I off the Flatiron on Thursday? Yes, I were. What about it?
What time did you set out?
About 1 o'clock.
And you got to the Flatiron about 2.
Well, and where's the harm in that?
Did you see anybody on the shore at that time?
I see a fool of a woman capering about on the beach, going on as if she was a loony. Then she runs up to the Flatiron and starts messing about there.
Was there anybody on the Flatiron?
There was a chap lying down, at least. It looked so.
And then?
Well, then she starts yowling and waving her arms.
Well?
Well, what? I didn't take no notice. I never take no notice of females.
Now, Pollock, did you see anybody else on the shore that morning?
Oh, not a soul.
Were you within sight of shore all the time?
Yes, I were.
Was anybody with you in the boat?
No, they weren't.
Then what was that grandson of yours doing?
Him. Well, he was with me.
Ah.
I thought you meant there was somebody else that didn't know had been there.
What do you mean by that?
Oh, nothing. Only policemen's a pack of fools, mostly.
That's enough of that. Where is your grandson?
Over to Cork. Went last Saturday, he did.
Cork, eh?
Mm.
Smuggling goods into Ireland?
Yeah, of course not. Business. My business.
Your business seems to be rather mysterious, Pollock. You'd better be careful. We'll want to see that young man when he gets back. At any rate, are you in a position to say whether you saw anybody walking along the shore between your cottage and the Flatiron?
Yes, I am. I see nobody. Not up to a quarter to 2, anyway. After that, I couldn't swear one way nor t'other.
Did you see any other boat in the neighbourhood?
No, I didn't.
Very well. If your memory should improve in the next few days, you'd better let us know. That's all for now.
Pack of fools. That's what they is, yes, a pack of bloody fools.
My dear Lord Peter, I'm so glad to see you. May I introduce my son, Henry? I wrote asking him to come and help us through this terrible time, and he has most kindly put his own business aside and come to me.
How do you do, Mr. Weldon?
I'm pleased to meet you.
Henry is so delighted that you're here to help us, Lord Peter. That policeman, what's his name, Miss Vane?
Inspector Umpleby.
Oh, that's it. Well, he's so stupid. Of course, he's a very well-meaning, honest man and most polite, but how can a person like that possibly understand a nature like Paul's? I knew Paul. So did Henry, didn't you, dear?
Oh, yes, certainly. Very pleasant fellow.
You know, don't you, dear, that he never would have taken his own life and left me like that without a word?
There, there, Mother. You must try to bear up.
Oh, yes, dear. I'm sorry. It's all been such a shock to me. But I mustn't be weak and silly. We must all be courageous and work hard to do something about it.
I say, I rather think a spot of something or other might do us all good.
Excellent idea.
Mr. Weldon, why don't you and I make a concerted masculine raid upon the bar?
Yes. Well, why not? Yes.
We'll instruct the waiter to attend upon you, ladies.
Thank you, Lord Peter. You're very kind.
Of course. Bit of a staggerer for the old lady, this.
Yes, I can imagine.
Takes it hard. Between you and me, it's all for the best. How's a woman of her age going to be happy with a fellow like that, eh? She's 57 as she's a day. Makes a chap look like a bit of a fool when his mother proposes to give him a 20-year-old lounge lizard for a step-papa. All over now, anyway. Suppose the chappie did do himself in, didn't he?
It rather looks like it, yes.
Couldn't face the prospect, eh? All his own fault. You can't trust these foreigners. Like collies. Lick your boots 1 minute and bite you the next. Don't like collies myself. Give me a good bull terrier any day.
So frightfully British and all that, what?
Thought I'd better push along and cheer Mother up. Stop all this nonsense about the fellow being murdered. Enough to set the old deer clean off a rocker, you know. Once they get those notions in their heads, it's a job to get rid of them. She's taken a notion that you and that vain girl are encouraging her.
Really?
Now, take it from me, old man. That kind of thing won't do at all.
Won't it?
I see your game, all right. You're nuts on this kind of thing, and it's all a darn good advertisement, and it gives you a jolly good excuse for barging around with a Harriet Vane girl. That's quite all right, but it's not quite the game to go playing my mother up, if you see what I mean. So I thought I'd just give you a hint. You won't take offence.
I'm quite ready to take anything I'm offered.
Eh? Oh! I see. That's good. That's good. What was yours? Martel 3-star. Here, Johnny. Same again with this gentleman.
You misunderstand me.
Oh, come on. Another little spot won't do you any harm.
No, thank you.
No? Well, if you won't, you won't. Well, at least we understand one another now, eh?
I think I understand you perfectly.
Good. Glad to have this chance of putting you wise. Whole thing's a nuisance, of course. Suppose we should be stuck here now till they found the body. Don't like these beastly watering places. Suits you all right, I dare say. I like a bit more open air and none of the jazz and dinner jackets.
You're quite right.
You think so, eh?
Hmm.
Well, I was putting you down for something more in the West End line. Well, I suppose you're a bit of a sportsman, too. Hunting, fishing, that sort of thing, eh?
I hunted pretty regularly with the Quorn and the Pytchley at one time, and I shoot and fish a bit. Our headquarters is down in Norfolk, Duke's Denver, on the borders of the Fen Country.
Oh, yes, of course. I live in that part of the world myself. Huntingdonshire, not far from Ely.
Yeah, I know that part pretty well. Flattish, of course, but uncommonly good sort of soil.
Nothing in farming these days. Look at all this Russian wheat they're dumping in. As if things weren't bad enough already. You're lucky. Takes a man all he can do to get his living off the land these days.
He must be trying to be obliged to leave things and come down to Wilbraham. How long do you think you'll be here?
Oh, I don't know. I've left a man in charge, of course.
Just so. Well, hadn't we better get back and join the ladies?
Ladies, eh? You be careful, my boy. Getting to the dangerous age, aren't you? If you ain't careful, you'll find yourself booked one of these days.
I dare say I shall manage to keep my head out of the noose.
Out of the... Oh! I see. The matrimonial news. Very good. Yes. That's a good one.
Well, Harriet, what did you make of Mr. Henry Weldon?
His manners are dreadful, and I don't think his brain's so much to write home about.
No, that's just it.
Just what?
Well, why is he here? Sudden spasm of filial affection?
His mother thinks so.
Do you think so?
Possibly. Or more likely, he doesn't want to get on the wrong side of her. It's her money, you know.
He's very like her, ain't he?
Very.
Hmm.
So much so, he gave me an odd feeling at first, as though I'd met him somewhere. I expect he's glad to be relieved of the prospect of Paul Alexis and can't help showing it. He's not very subtle.
I'd like to know why he's trying to drive me out of this place.
How do you mean?
He wants it to be understood that this detecting business is to stop. So much so that he's prepared to spend an indefinite time here hanging around his mother to see that she doesn't make inquiries on her own.
Well, I dare say he has nothing else to do.
Nothing else to do? My dear girl is a farmer.
Well?
And this is June.
What about it?
Why ain't he attending to his haymaking?
I didn't think of that.
About the last weeks of the year that any decent farmer would be willing to waste are the weeks from hay to harvest. I can understand his running over for the day, but he seems to be prepared to make a session of it. I think it's deuced funny.
Yes, it is rather funny. But are you casting Henry Weldon in the part of murderer?
I should like to. But I don't feel I can, somehow.
No?
No. I don't think Henry had the brains to have murdered Alexis.
Then who are we left with? Perkins? Haviland Martin? Arbuty can't lay his hands on either of them. And in any case, if Martin was drinking in the Feathers at 1:30, we know he can't have been at the Flatiron in time to commit the murder. There's William Bright, of course. Did Salcombe Hardy print the story you fed him?
Yes, and the Gazette's offering a reward for information about the Rizzer. But there's nothing to be done but wait and see whether Bright rises to the bait.
There is one thing I could do,
mm?
And that's to get Antoine to introduce me to Alexis's former girlfriend. Our Inspector Umpletty didn't have much success in getting her to talk.
Try it, Harriet. Try it, light of my life. At this stage, I fear almost anything is worth a try.
Tell me, Monsieur Antoine, you're a person of great experience. Is love, in your opinion, a matter of the first importance?
It is, alas, of great importance, but of the first importance, no. L'amour. These ladies come and dance and want love and think it is happiness. And they tell me about their sorrows. Me. And they have no sorrows at all. Only that they are silly and selfish and lazy. Their husbands are unfaithful and their lovers run away. And what do they say? Do they say, I have two hands, two feet, all my faculties, I will make a life for myself? No. They say, give me cocaine. Give me the cocktail. Give me the thrill. Give me the gigolo. Give me l'amour. Like a mouton bleating in a field.
You're right, Monsieur Antoine. I don't believe l'amour matters so terribly after all.
Oh, no. Mademoiselle knows very well the difference between love which is important and love which is not important. But you must remember that one may have an important love for an unimportant person.
Yes, yes, it's true. Monsieur Antoine, I wondered, that girl that Paul Alexis used to go round with?
Leila Garland?
Yes. Would it be possible for you to put me in touch with her?
Nothing is more simple, mademoiselle. Miss Garland usually joins Mr. De Soto for lunch after the morning concert.
That's Louis De Soto, her latest flame.
That is so, mademoiselle. He is playing at the Winter Gardens. If mademoiselle desires it, I can call for you and accompany you to the Winter Gardens myself. I can introduce you. It will be simpler. So, n'est-ce pas?
Well, Miss Fane, of course, Paul Alexis was a terribly nice boy, but he was really too romantic altogether. He was so terribly timid and lonely. But when Louise came along, I realised at once where my affections really lay. I was all the more sorry about it because poor darling Paul...
Yeah, not darling, honey.
Oh, of course not, Louise. Only the poor thing is dead. Anyway, I was sorry because poor Paul seemed to be terribly worried about something. But he didn't confide in me, and, well, what is a girl to do if a man won't confide in her?
How long ago did he start being worried?
Oh, let me see. I think it was about 5 months ago. Yes, it was. I mean, that was when the letters started coming.
Letters?
Yes. Long letters with foreign stamps on them. I think they came from Czechoslovakia or one of those queer places. It wasn't Russia, anyway, because I asked him and he said no.
Miss Garland, have you told anybody else about these letters?
No. Well, you see, Paul always said it would do him harm to have them mentioned. He said the Bolsheviks would kill him if anything got out. But I don't believe it was the Bolsheviks at all.
No, it doesn't seem likely, does it, honey?
No, Louise, it was just stupid, him expecting me to swallow that.
But I really think in your place, Miss Garland, I'd have felt justified in finding out who the letters were from.
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, Miss Vane, I did take a tiny peep once. I thought I owed it to myself. But they were all nonsense. You couldn't make out a word of them.
Were they in a foreign language?
Well, I don't know. They were all in printing letters, and some of the words hadn't any vowels in them at all. You couldn't possibly pronounce them.
It sounds like a cipher.
Yes, Antoine, that's what I thought.
How often did they come?
About once a week, sometimes oftener. He kept them locked up in a little box. He used to answer them, too. Sometimes when I went round to see him, he'd have his door locked, and old Marla Frank, his landlady, said he was writing letters and wasn't to be disturbed. Well, that wasn't the kind of thing you could expect a girl to put up with.
No, of course you couldn't, baby.
Haven't you told the police about these letters?
No, I have not. I don't say I mightn't have told them if they'd asked properly, With the way that fat umputty went on, you'd have thought I wasn't a respectable girl. So I said to him, I know nothing about it, and you can't make me answer your silly questions unless you take me down to your dirty old police station and charge me. That's what I said. And it's a good thing there's a law in this country to protect girls like I.
Ain't she the snail's ankles, eh? Yeah. Hey, and now, if you'll excuse me, lovelies, I have a rehearsal. 2 o'clock. As always, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2 o'clock without fail.
Yes?
Mrs. LeFranc?
Yes.
Good morning. I'm looking for a room.
Professional, dearie?
No, I write books. In fact, Mrs. LeFranc, I'm the person who found poor Mr. Alexis last week.
Oh.
I've been staying at the Resplendent, but it's terribly expensive. And I thought if your room is still vacant, I might be able to take it.
Well, you better come along in. Excuse me, negligee, won't you? I don't get time to posh myself up of a morning. How long will you be wanting the room for?
I don't quite know. It depends on when they find the body.
Oh, yes. They've got to find him first, poor lamb, ain't they? You'd better come up and see the room. There, dearie. I'm sure you couldn't find better in Wilvercombe. And it's nice and quiet. You'll be able to do your writing beautiful.
It's a very pleasant room, Mrs. LeFranc.
Well, I've had it all cleaned up. And if you was to dislike his books and bits and things, I could easy put them on one side. But there, I dare say you wouldn't mind them. It's not as if he died in this room, is it, poor soul? And I'm sure there's nothing infectious in them books, for he never was subject to any complaint, enjoying good health as a rule, barring the pain in his joints, which he had to lay up for at times, and the amount of antipyrin he took for it would surprise you, and he never would see a doctor.
What are your terms, Mrs. LeFranc?
2.5 guineas a week inclusive, or 12 shillings and find yourself. And it's not everybody I'd do that for. Only I can see you're one of the quiet sort. If there's one thing I don't want in my house, it's trouble. I'm sure all this dreadful business is trouble enough. Oh, dear. I was that fond of poor Mr. Alexis.
Yeah, I'm sure you must have been.
Such a thoughtful boy, and the manners of a prince he had.
What about Mr. Alexis and that girl of his, Layla Garland? Were they very close?
What there might be between them two, I couldn't tell you, dearie. But I must say I wasn't sorry when that little cat took herself off. You're well rid of her, I said. That's what I said, and if you ask me, he knew it well enough.
You don't think he killed himself on her account, then?
No. Oh, I've thought about it over and over again, and I'll tell you what I think. I think it was his speculations that went wrong.
Speculations?
Yes, those speculations of his in foreign countries. The letters he used to get. He used to say, Ma, when my ship comes in, I'll give you a tiara stuck full of diamonds and make you housekeeper to royalty.
When did the last of these letters arrive?
Well, dearie, there was one of them. It came 2 days before this dreadful thing happened. It must have been a long one, for he was shut up hours and hours with it. I heard him about in his room all night, burning his papers he was, and in the morning he gave me his week's money. Poor Mr. Alexis. There. Life's a funny thing, and you can't account for it, can you? There, then. Well, when was you wanting to take the room, dearie?
I'll be coming in tonight. I don't know whether I'll want my board or not, but if I leave my suitcase and pay you the 12 shillings for the room in advance, that'll be all right, won't it?
That's okay, dearie. Just you come when you like. You'll be happy with Ma LeFranc. Oh, I only wish poor Mr. Alexis had told me all his worries. He'd be here now. But he was a foreigner when all's said and done, and they aren't like us, are they? Mind that dustpan, dearie, or the number of times I've told that girl not to leave it there.
And as for Pollock, my lord, he's nothing but an old scoundrel, and the worst of it is you can't believe a word he says. I'd like to know what he was really up to.
Murdering Paul Alexis, maybe. Or conveying the murderer to the scene of the crime for a consideration. That's more likely, really, wouldn't you say, Inspector?
Always supposing there was a murderer, my lord.
Well, this business of the cipher letters makes it look more like murder, which is one up to us.
What about Mrs. Lefrank's idea about speculations?
I don't know. It's perfectly obvious that Alexis had some scheme in hand, that it may be that the scheme went wrong. Is it an accident that Alexis should have been killed just as his plans were maturing?
What about Haviland Martin? Have we decided he was all the innocent camper?
Well, it's quite clear he didn't leave the Three Feathers before 1:30, which rules out any chance that he could have been at the Flatiron by 2. I had a look round his campsite at Hinks Lane.
Oh? Find anything, my lord?
Oh, not really. Usual campsite rubbish. There was just one curious thing, though. There was a piece of thinnish rope in among the ashes of the fire. Only about 3 inches of it left. Can't quite make out whether it's of any significance.
Do we know yet whether Haviland Martin actually spent the Thursday morning in Wilvercombe?
I can't say for sure, but it seems likely. He told the landlord of the Feathers that his car had broken down and a woman had given him a lift. We checked up at the local garage afterwards, and it's right enough. Martin went into the garage about 3 o'clock, and the mechanic went with him to his Morgan, which was refusing to start. Something wrong with the HT lead, apparently. They soon had it going again.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, what is it, Rushwaldy?
Telephone message, sir, for Lord Peter. It's from a Mr. Salcombe Hardy at the Bellevue Hotel. I ask you to come over right away, my lord. It seems there's a gentleman waiting to see you urgent. Name of Bright.
Aha. Inspector, I hope you and Miss Vane will excuse me. I'll report back to you immediately afterwards.
Ah, Whimsy.
Hello, Sally.
This is Mr. Bright.
Delighted to meet you, Mr. Bright.
He won't come across with his story to anybody but you, Whimsy. Though I've explained to him, if he's thinking of claiming the Gazette's reward, he'll have to let me in on it.
Well, I suppose that's only fair, Mr. Hardy, and I can assure you that the money is a consideration. But I'm in a painful position, though I haven't done any willful harm.
I suppose we begin from the beginning. Now, about this razor. By the way, your full name is...
William Bright, my lord.
Aha.
Well, my lord, I am, as you might say, an itinerant hairdresser. I go from one place to the other, especially seaside towns during the season, and take temporary posts.
Where did you work last?
Oh, I haven't had anything, really, for a long time. I tried to get work in Seahampton. In fact, I'm still trying. I went back there last Wednesday after trying Wilvercombe and Leston Hoe. I got the razor in Seahampton from the place where I tried to get work. Merriweather, the name was. I needed a new razor, and he was willing to sell this one cheap.
You'd better describe the razor.
Yes, sir. It was a Sheffield blade with a white handle, and it came originally from a retailer in Jermyn Street. Endicott, I think the name was, on the handle. It was a good razor, but a bit worn. Well, after going to Leston Hoe, I came back to Wilvercombe, but there was no work in Wilvercombe either, and I grew very low in spirits.
When did you arrive back in Wilvercombe?
Last Monday week, my lord. On the Tuesday night, I went down to the sea, just over there at the end of the town, and sat on a seat to think things over. It was getting on for midnight. I looked at the sea, and I felt the razor in my pocket, and I wondered whether it was worthwhile struggling on. There was the sea, and there was the razor. And the sea, washing up against the wall of the Esplanade, it seemed to be calling to me, if you can understand what I mean. It sounded as if it was saying, "Chuck it. Chuck it up, William Bright." Fascinating and frightening at the same time. Well, I sat there for a bit, trying to make up my mind, when I heard somebody walking along, and presently this young fellow came and sat down on the seat beside me.
What did he look like?
He was in evening dress, I remember, with an overcoat and a soft hat. He had a black beard. Well, he offered me a cigarette and we got into conversation. I remember it was one of those Russian cigarettes with a paper tube to it. He spoke friendly and I don't know how it was, but I found myself telling him all about the fix I was in, what with no work and everything. And then he said he only wished his difficulties could be solved as easy as mine and how I ought to pull myself together and make a fresh start. "You give me that razor," he said, "and go away and think it over."
And you gave it to him?
He gave me some money, £5 it was, in treasury notes, and I gave him the razor. And that's the last I saw of him.
Hmm. Well, it certainly sounds like Paul Alexis.
Mr. Hardy, about the reward...
Well, it all sounds okay to me, but we'll have to check up on your story, you know, old man. You might have invented it. But if the cops can prove what you say about yourself, it's their business, really, then there'll be a good fat check for you that ought to keep you going for some time.
It seems to me, my lord, that this man Bright's story makes sense one way and another. Despite the various loose ends, I must say it rather makes it look like suicide after all, don't it?
I suppose I ought to be satisfied. The only thing that worries me, Umpletee, is that if I'd wanted to invent a story to fit this case, that is exactly the story I should have invented. I wonder where Mr. Bright was at 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon.
Oh, you're determined and no mistake, my lord, if you don't mind me saying so.
Have you got a copy of the tide tables for Wolvercombe?
Yeah, should be somewhere here. Let me see. Yes. Here you are, my lord.
Thank you. Ah, now, I thought so. I thought so.
What is it, my lord?
Bright described how the tide, lapping against the esplanade, seemed to call to him in a very convincing and poetic manner. That was on Tuesday around midnight. But at midnight on Tuesday the 16th of June, the tide could not have been lapping against the esplanade. It was at the extreme bottom of the ebb.
In that episode of Have His Carcass, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Wimsey, Ian Carmichael. Harriet Vane, Mariah Aitken. Inspector Umpletee, Nigel Stock. Henry Weldon, Warren Clark. Mrs. Weldon, Isabel Dean. Mrs. Lefranc, Betty Marsden. Mr. Bright, Norman Bird. Antoine, Malcolm Ingram. Salcom Hardy, Patrick Newell. Leila Garland, Rosalind Ayres. Pollock, Peter Tottenham. Luis de Soto, Hayden Wood. Narrator, John Westbrook. Have His Carcass was adapted by Alistair Beaton from the book by Dorothy L. Sayers and was produced by Martin Fisher.